Welcome to Tips for the Transition, where we have deep, meaningful conversations about how significant changes can affect us, our families, relationships, and careers, and how we can move through those changes with more ease and grace. I'm your host, Maria Tomas Keegan, Certified Career and Life Coach for Women, and I'm here to help you navigate the messy seasons of life. In the fifth season of the podcast, we'll focus on career transition because in this post-pandemic world, many women are re-examining how they think and feel about their work lives. So we answer big questions like, who am I now? And how do I move on from here? The resources we create with each episode can help women move from panic to powerful and from rocky to resilient. So if you're ready to consider new options, be inspired, and meet incredible women who are on this life journey with us, you're in the right place. This is Tips for the Transition. Hello, everyone. Thank you so much for joining us on today's podcast. I'm Maria Tomas Keegan, your host, career and life coach for women. Now, I am passionate about a couple of things when it comes to working with professional women. And the first thing is helping you create a life and career that fulfills you because you don't deserve to stay stuck where you don't belong. And the second thing is introducing you to fabulous women on this podcast who are resources for you. And they are role models as well. They bring us ideas to explore that may share some different approaches to career transition, different practices, and some tips. So if something strikes a chord while you're listening today and you want more information, check out the show notes below. So that they will give you ways to connect with us, to follow us, to subscribe. And I'd love it if you would share a comment. Tell us what resonated with you most. So this conversation today hits my heart on several fronts, and it fits this podcast's mission to a T. We're going to talk about the delicate balance of being a professional woman and a caregiver. Seeing a need and building a business around it, and the stigma around asking for help when we need it most. Because we must have open and honest conversations at home and at work about the impact that caregiving has on us, I invited Kelly Bradley to join us. She will share her story and her expertise and hit on all those topics I mentioned. Kelly is founder and creator of The Devoted Daughter, an organization helping women find solutions to care for their aging parents. After landing the role of family caregiver, Kelly saw a need in her community to help others in the same boat. Her next professional endeavor, therefore, was owning and operating an in-home care company, where she served hundreds of families over 11 years. Now, Kelly has a unique perspective on caregiving. It's the combination of caring for family members herself and then hiring, training, and managing a professional in-home care company. And those gave her invaluable insights. We're going to get to some of those today. She serves her clients through workshops, speaking events, and digital courses, and published her first book, Always Her Daughter, which is part memoir and part caregiver manual. So as a caregiver myself, I'm looking forward to having this conversation and kind of pulling back the curtain with Kelly. So she calls herself the accidental caregiver, and I get that. Welcome, Kelly. Thank you so much for joining us.
Thanks for having me. I'm excited to be here today.
It is my pleasure to have you. It is a conversation that I've been looking forward to because I have it with a lot of people because I am a caregiver myself, but you're a pro at this. So I would love for you to share the Cliff Notes version of your story and how you became an accidental caregiver.
Well, first of all, I don't think any of us as children you know, are thinking to ourselves, oh, I'm going to care for my parents someday. We know we'll be there for them, and we know we'll be involved, and we hope we'll transition throughout our lives as we all age. But for me in particular, my mom had diabetes, and everything that could go wrong did go wrong with her body. That it's a dreadful disease, and it ravaged her. And slowly but surely, she started to need more help. And I think that's where a lot of us find ourselves getting tripped up in this. It's, you know, it starts out slowly of, oh, can you pick Dad and I up? We need a ride. It's going to get dark earlier. And that's what happened to me. But I was pretty young when this started. I was in my 30s. And I think for most folks, this begins in their 50s. So I found myself in a place where nobody really understood it. They didn't really get how much was involved. And as I said, little by little, it started to become more and more and more. And then it started to really take over my world. And I was working at the time, I was traveling, and I knew I needed to make a career shift because I had to spend more time with my mom. And she was still independent and feisty enough to make her own decisions. So we as a family, you know, we didn't want to interfere with her decisions. And that's where, as you said, Maria, that delicate balance kind of comes in. Where do you sort of start to step in, and where is it like none of your business? Mm-hmm. So as time went on, her situation became more complex. I started to think to myself, you know, there's other people that are, as you said, in the same boat that I am. And maybe I could be of help to them. Maybe I could provide support and resources and assistance. I get this. I live this to the core of my being every day. And that's what led me to start, become involved with In-Home Care. And I was actually a part of a franchise system. And I selected that because I wanted to spend time with people in my community. And I knew I needed that additional support for paperwork and processing and really building the business so it could sustain itself and I could focus on my gifts. And that was really that face-to-face interaction with the clients and their families.
Thank you for doing that, because so many of us need that kind of support and we don't even know it. We don't even know what we need. We don't know what questions to ask. And as women, we're often the first to jump in, right? To help family and friends. Yeah. Yes. So when that happens, that, you know, a loved one or a parent needs the kind of care, how do we find the balance? I hate that word. I don't use it very often. But in this case, you know, use the word I love to use, which is harmony. How do we find the harmony in taking care of ourselves, taking care of everyone else while we're managing a career?
Well, I think it's tough. And at first you don't, you know, you've got, as you said, we're the first people to jump in. It's like, I'm going to get on a plane. I'll be there right now. What do we need to do to get this resolved? Especially as professional executive women, we're used to having some control over what the outcomes will be. We're able to plan. We're able to put a strategy together. And I always say to people, you know, best laid plans can change on a dime. So you might think you have a plan and you might think you can execute that plan, and then something railroads you. You get off track for whatever reason. So I think the harmony is found in time, and you've got to be able to be a little bit flexible. The other thing that's important is oftentimes there's one person in the family that takes on the role of lead caregiver. And many times it's the oldest daughter in the family. And that person feels kind of the brunt of everything. And maybe it's, you know, the financial support, or it's, you know, the traveling or what have you. But I always like to remind people that others can bring skills to the party. So in my case, for example, I'm more of a doer. And my sister-in-law is a really patient listener. I'm not as good at that, but that brought a lot of value in. You know, maybe somebody cooks, maybe someone has little kids and they can't be there as much, but in a couple of years, their time will free up more. So it's not always about the person who's contributing the most right now. It is harmony over time. And allowing yourself that, like a commitment. I paid a personal trainer in advance because I knew that if I paid for that time for myself, I would be much more likely to go than if I just tried to jump into a class or do something at home.
Oh, that's a brilliant idea. Because it's so easy for us to, for that time to slip away and get filled with some other urgent, more urgent matter. And then we don't take care of ourselves as we need to.
And what's going to happen in an hour? You know, I mean,
right.
But when you're in the middle of chaos, an hour is like, oh no, I just need to drop everything and go.
Yeah. And you know, if necessary, make sure that there's somebody there or available in case something does happen. Mm-hmm. And you're only, you know, a cell phone call away, right?
Yes.
Yeah. You know, I love what you said about tapping into other people's gifts. So you're not as patient or as good a listener, but you're the doer. Mm-hmm. And your sister-in-law was able to fill that other space that was very important for your mom, probably, mm-hmm. to be heard, right?
Absolutely.
Yeah. So, and there are other, so many other gifts. If we just think about who do we know who can help us and what can they bring to the party that we need, that the person we're caring for needs, that is harder for us to give, or we don't have as much time to give, so we're not doing it as well as we might like to. I love that idea. I think that's so important.
Well, and oftentimes, if there's a diagnosis or something changes or shifts, people scurry around to help initially.
Yeah.
And then over time, they sort of fade away. And yeah. I think there's a couple of reasons for that. They get busy with their own lives. It's not intentional, so that it's not as top of mind for them. And B, I think they become uncomfortable. And they don't know how to approach the person that needs the help. And they think to themselves, gosh, I offered to help, but that was like a month ago. And I, you know, so over time, they get more and more uncomfortable and they get further and further away.
Right.
And so for us, the caregiver, we need to take some responsibility to reach out to those folks who did volunteer to help.
Yeah.
Say, hey, Julie, you know, you said you'd love to visit with my mom or pop in and bring her dinner. I could really use the help next Tuesday. And, you know, that's uncomfortable for us too.
Yeah. And it, you know, it's so we, as humans, I think we don't want to be burdens, right? Mm-hmm. So, you know, as the patient, they don't want to be a burden. We, as the caregiver, we don't want to be a burden. And people who are there to help don't want to be a burden. So, you know, we're all thinking we're burdens, mm-hmm. and no one is reaching out and saying, how can I help? And you're so right about, you know, when something first happens, everybody's there. It's like when we lose someone, right? They're all there for the viewing and the celebration of life and, you know, the weeks maybe after. And then everyone's back to their lives and we're still left in grief.
Yes.
With no one. And it's hard. And this is the same situation. You know, the fact is when someone in our lives, very near and dear to us, gets sick, we're grieving. We're in a state of grief and we also need to be doing stuff, right? And that's another delicate balance, finding Definitely. The time to grieve for the loss of things as they used to be, right?
Yep. And we're fixers.
We are fixers, yeah. All right, so let's talk a little bit about your experience while operating the in-home care company. I'm sure that you saw a lot of women going through daily struggles. Let's talk a little bit about what you saw and what advice do you have for us?
So I think one of the biggest things is that the person calling for support is typically the oldest daughter in the family. That, you know, we always, a majority of our marketing and our outreach was to that person, because 9 times out of 10, it was that individual who was going to be calling and reaching out for help. It wasn't the person who needed the help. And that is a big bugaboo, because your parents may agree to the help and recognize that they need the help, but it's tough for them to have somebody coming into their home. And the sooner you can get them accustomed to having somebody come into the home, the better. And that's where it's really important for families and in-home care companies alike to realize that this is a partnership. You know, it's an awkward moment for a family to call me into the home and for me to sit down with them for 45 minutes or an hour, and then, you know, a couple days later come back and introduce another new person into the home. And it takes time to develop that trust and that rapport and that relationship. But I say getting someone in there sooner rather than later is important, because as people age and their needs increase, or maybe they are diagnosed with a dementia-related illness or heart disease or diabetes or something like that that starts to limit them in certain ways, knowing them sooner allows you to go with them on that journey, especially someone living with a dementia-related illness. Yeah. Oftentimes they'll forget, they'll say things like, I want to go home. I just want to go home. And what you have to remember is you don't know what they're referring to. Are they referring to their childhood home? Are they referring to their grandparents? Are they referring to the home that they raised their children in? So you have to be a detective. And so if you know the person a little bit before the disease progresses, it allows you to access that information and say, tell me about that. Tell me about that home. Where a lot of people put up the fight. It's like, you know, they push against the other individual. Even when getting care, you know, pushing against somebody doesn't usually result in the outcome that you were looking for. So I always say everyone wants to be heard, whether their expectations are realistic or not.
Yeah, I love that we have to be a little curious, right, about what they really mean by what they say, rather than jump to conclusions and think we know. Mm-hmm. And engaging them in a conversation about it just kind of eases the tension, mm-hmm. and allows them to kind of just convey what they're thinking. Yeah, yeah, so important.
And just knowing and recognizing that our parents are changing. And like we were just speaking about, you know, it's a little bit of a loss. You know, they're not able to maybe do the things that they used to do. So we just need to be grateful that they're here and appreciate what they can do and not worry about what they can't do anymore.
Right. And that's why I talk about this. It's kind of an evolving state of grief, because mm-hmm. we remember what it used to be like. And mm-hmm. if dementia is involved, they don't. Mm-hmm. And we've lost who they used to be to us. Mm-hmm. And that's a hard thing for us to deal with sometimes. And then we get very impatient, because what we want, right, our wants are that, you know, we want it the way it used to be.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think we fall back into our God-given roles too. It's like, I fall back into being the oldest sister, bossing my brothers around. You know, it's like, no, I know, you know, and, you know, it's just easy to slip back into that communication pattern. And we do the same thing when we're interacting with our parents, right?
Yeah. Yeah.
Fall back into that role and not, it's hard to pull ourselves up sometimes and say, okay, I'm a grown woman. I can handle this. And we can talk about this as adults now.
Right. Yeah. And that Yeah, that's so important to try to create that common ground,
mm-hmm.
so that the conversations don't get so emotional and heated and mm-hmm. yeah. You know, you talked about what if a loved one refuses the help? I remember when I'm a caregiver for my husband, and a while ago now, about a year ago, he went into a real slump health-wise, and I needed help, and he needed help. And what the way I presented it to him, and thankfully his mind is perfectly fine.
Mm-hmm.
That's a blessing and a curse, by the way. But
yes.
The way I explained it to him was that he didn't need the help. I needed the help.
Mm-hmm.
And he was very amenable when I positioned it that way. But this is not, I'm bringing help in to help me so that I have more time to help him.
Mm-hmm.
And that was accepted. So that might be another way that you can,
yeah,
you can talk to them.
Every family is different. You know, I mean, this is such an individual thing.
It is.
So it's really important for the in-home care company to have that relationship with the family and understand what's acceptable and what isn't, and be partner together.
Yeah.
Because especially when family is not in the area, or the person may not have family. I mean, we in a lot of cases became an extended family of the people that we were caring for.
That's right. That's right. And, you know, that's honestly, that's what happened to me, because we don't have any family close by here.
Mm-hmm.
So it was our extent. It absolutely, I can resonate with that. Absolutely became, and the woman who came in was fabulous, and she was our go-to,
mm-hmm.
with, you know, whatever we needed. So it was great support. Exactly. Thankfully, we don't need that right now. His health has improved, but yeah, it's so important to reach out for help. So let's talk for a minute about how overwhelming it can become. What's the best way for us to deal with that, and to talk with family and friends and even our loved ones, if we can, to kind of plan things out so that we can reduce the overwhelm?
Well, 40% of people say they never plan to have this conversation with their parents. And the main reason they cited was, it's none of my business, and I'm afraid that I'm going to damage the relationship with my parents. And it's a conversation that is not a one and done. And I've heard families say, we're all going to be together over the holidays. Let's just sit down and talk to mom and dad. And that feels like an ambush to me. So really, I think reducing the overwhelm starts with having small conversations and doing what I call landing the plane, which means you just ask a question and become silent and let them talk and start to figure out, you know, what they're thinking, what their hopes and dreams are, what their wishes are. And as I said earlier, maybe that's not realistic, and that's okay. Maybe a portion of it is, and a portion of it isn't.
Yeah.
But you have to really understand what's behind all of that. And the other thing that is really important about having these conversations is gathering information, because we all think, you know, everybody's busy and doing their own deal and taking care of their own families. But what if something happened to dad when he was on a golfing trip and the first responders called and said, you know, your dad just had a heart attack, can you tell us what medications he's taking? And you have no idea. So documenting and really sort of building a file of information, which is not always easy, because a lot of people are resistant to that. They feel like that information is private to them. But if there's a crisis and it's needed, you want to be able to access it. I mean, it's like any emergency situation, most people don't want to prepare for an emergency. But if these conversations happen in small segments and not all at once, I think it really helps the family understand where their parents are, and it also starts to protect you in case of an emergency. If COVID taught us anything, I mean, I can't even imagine not being able to be in the hospital with my mom and advocate for her. I can't even imagine. She couldn't advocate for herself. She was way too sick.
Right. You know, it's such a brilliant idea, having small conversations, right? The ambush is never a good idea.
No.
Let me tell you, it's never a good idea. But the small conversations, you know, starting small, gathering information a little bit at a time, and building on that, if you have time. So, you know, there are some circumstances where you don't.
Right.
And a bigger conversation, hopefully not an ambush, but a bigger conversation may need to be had to gather the information sooner rather than later. But if you have time to plan, then I love the idea of these having just small conversations and kind of finding out what their hopes and dreams and wishes are for the, you know, the inevitable. We're all going to get there in one way, shape, or form.
Mm-hmm.
Wouldn't it be lovely if we all got there in a healthy state? It's not likely, but it would be lovely.
Well, so, at the daughter, we have what's called a circle of care. And mm-hmm. the idea behind that is, and this is where I think that documenting kind of comes in handy. So the people at the center of the circle are people that you would call in the middle of the night in case there's an emergency. And then as you move out from that, there are people that you interact with. There's neighbors, there's physicians, there's the postmaster, there's the person at the grocery store. And just kind of thinking of it in that way and building that list. I mean, just even knowing your neighbor's phone, their neighbor's phone numbers, right?
Yeah.
In case of emergency. Like, I can't get a hold of my mom and I live in New York and she lives in California. I could call June and just have her just run over and check on her. But yeah. It's building those relationships and gathering that intelligence that I think is really, really important.
Yeah, I love that circle of care and thinking about it as kind of a target, right? So the people in the very center are the people closest who are really involved in the day to day. And then and I think what's important about that, I talk to my clients all the time about creating that, I call it your personal board of directors. But in this case, it's creating that that network of people who can support mm-hmm. you and your loved one who is struggling right now, and letting them, here's the key, I think, letting those people that you want in your circle know that they're in your circle.
Yes.
And
yes.
That you're going to reach out at it. So June, it's my mom's name, by the way. It's so interesting you said that. So if you call June knows you might call her
mm-hmm.
from New York
mm-hmm.
and say, I can't get a hold of my mom, please check on her. She knows that that call may come someday. That I think that's important, that you involve them mm-hmm. and let them know that they have a role to play. And then it's less likely when you do that, I think, it's less likely that they're going to go MIA on you.
Yes, yes. Yeah. And sometimes it's interesting because in my mom's circle, you know, she had a lot of friends and she was very social and lots of doctors. But there were also people that were unexpected to me that showed up, like her hairdresser and the lady that did her nails. I mean, these were people that were definitely in her circle of care, but, you know, not real close friends, but caring, kind-hearted individuals.
Yeah. Yeah.
And so I think we can't be closed-minded or judgmental. We need to just be open. And I, you know, lack of companionship is worse than smoking 15 cigarettes a day. So having that social engagement and continuing that and encouraging that is very, very important.
Yeah. Yeah, I think that's so true. Human connection. I don't think we can negate that. It is so important for all of us to be able to reach out and literally reach out and touch someone and be touched back. Mm-hmm. There's so much value in that, and it just feeds our souls.
Yes, it does.
Yeah. All right, so let's talk about some resources. What if this is a situation I have here? I want, and my husband wants, to remain at home, cared for at home. But we need resources for that. And then we need to understand what the long-term possibilities are. So how do we plan for that? And what resources are available for long-term care and caring at home?
Well, I think the first thing I want to say is that when you're dealing with an in-home care environment or home health, each state has different rules and regulations. So it's really important that you understand what can and cannot be done. So I'll just give you an example. In the state of Oregon, we have RNs that are on staff, and they can help caregivers with tasks of nursing. In the state of Kentucky, you're not even allowed to give medications. So it can be the care that's available to you can be very different depending on where you live. So that's like step one. You really need to understand that. And the best place to go for that information is really your state government website, or you can also ask your primary care physician or a social worker who works in the office of the primary care if they can give you information on that or direct you to the best place. If an individual is a veteran, there are VA benefits available for in-home care or long-term care, and it's a process. So I always tell, and it works in a similar fashion to Medicaid. So it's a spend down benefit, but the best place to get information on that is from the VA officer in the county in which your person resides. In-home care can be paid for. It's primarily private pay. There are some benefits, some minimal federal benefits that caregivers can receive. There are also some states now. I think Washington State offers some pretty significant benefits and actually pays the caregiver for their time. So that's something that you could look into at the state level. You've probably seen a lot of ads about the Medicare Advantage programs that are now offering in-home care. And that's something that I would just say, read the fine print, because my understanding is the care that's offered in those plans is very limited at this time. So it may be like 3 hours a week or something. It's not a lot. And then there are folks who have long-term care policies, so long-term insurance policy. And that's something that I always remind people to make sure that they have durable power of attorney, so that when they're trying to make these phone calls and get information on these policies, they can actually speak to the person who's giving them the information. Because it's super frustrating when you wait on hold for an hour and a half and then the person says, well, you're Mrs. Smith's daughter, but you need power of attorney or I can't speak to you. Those policies also differ vary widely. So it's important to get a copy of the policy and read it and know what you're dealing with. And those are the primary funding. And there are other smaller grants that could be available in cities or towns or what have you. And then just purely on kind of a social level, there are like senior centers or community centers that can offer support or guide you or point you in the right direction. But I think you want to, whoever you're bringing into your home, you want to vet them appropriately and make sure that you know, this person has the skills that you need. They're on, they're, you know, they've got the integrity, and that your individual is going to be safe at home.
Yeah, absolutely. So I think the bottom line of all of that is do your research.
Yes.
And the sooner you do it, the better off you'll be. If you foresee this coming, it's the best time when there is no pressure. Mm-hmm. It's the best time to explore the options. If you kind of get a sense that this could be where you're headed. And very often we don't do that. We don't prepare in like that. So when it is upon you and you know that you're going to need these, still do the research, because it's so important to know, you know, your point about long-term care policies, they do vary widely. We have one for my husband, and I tried to access it about a year ago when he was not doing well. And it was some things came up that I wasn't aware of, mm-hmm. That they would not cover until, you know, 120 days went by.
Right.
And it's not 120 calendar days. I won't go into the details, but we were surprised mm-hmm. that the policy didn't cover what we thought. Mm-hmm. So, be careful and do the research. And research the people you're bringing in really carefully, really
yep.
carefully. This is so, nobody wants to have this conversation. It's a tough conversation to have. And the last thing I want to touch on here is the importance of having the conversation at work so that the people in your leadership team understand what you're going through, so that they can also be supportive.
Yeah, because often we like create these silos in our lives, right? And we keep this caregiving role very private.
Yeah.
Very close to the vest. And especially people who have a difficult or challenging relationship with the person they're caring for.
Yeah.
And, you know, a lot of people just don't want to go into all that at work.
Right.
So it's uncomfortable.
Yeah. Yeah. But the conversations, once you have them, once you kind of open the floodgates a little bit, they become easier to have. And keeping this to yourself, struggling in silence mm-hmm. while you're a caregiver and you're not letting anybody at work know what's going on, and your work suffers as a result, there's no space, right, for them to understand until you tell them. So,
and so many others are going through the same thing.
Yes. Yeah.
I think, you know, the person who has the courage to maybe, you know, share will hopefully be able to help the next person.
Yeah.
More comfortable in sharing or opening up.
Yeah. It's important to have these conversations. All right, Kelly, we end every episode with our segment on my guests' best tips and strategies for their area of expertise. That's why we call this show Tips for the Transition. So let's start with your first tip. What is it?
So it's really, I said this during our conversation, but everyone wants to be heard. So
yes.
Landing the plane and listening, no matter how difficult it is vitally important.
Yeah. It's, again, it's communicating, right?
Mm-hmm.
It's leaving the channels open.
Mm-hmm.
Asking probing questions and listening for the answers. Love that.
All right. Coming, showing up in without judgment.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Yeah. Mm-hmm. So important. Mm-hmm. Okay. What's your next one?
Start the conversation sooner rather than later. And as we said, it's the small conversations,
yeah.
building intelligence, and without someone feeling like they're being attacked or ambushed. It's
yeah.
just information gathering so that, you know, as time goes on, you have what you need.
Yeah. We've talked about some really important stuff. Do you have a third tip for us?
I think it's really just do your homework, as we were just talking about. Get the research done, because as you said, if you start that process in the middle of a firestorm, it's going to be much more difficult. And those, you know, gathering insurance information and long-term care information, it can be, I can't tell you how many times I've just said to my clients, just let me do it for you. Just let me send the phone call.
Making decisions like that under such duress, it doesn't bode well for making a sound, well thought out, well researched decision.
Mm-mm.
Yeah. So, you know, we're most of us are probably going to go through this in one way, shape, or form in our lives. So knowing what to prepare for now, just thinking about it, gathering some information now before anything happens, having little conversations now, not a bad idea.
Yeah, just small steps.
Yeah.
Just start to take the small steps.
Yeah. Before it becomes, before you become an accidental caregiver. Yeah.
Correct.
Yeah. Yeah. Oh, Kelly, I really appreciate your being here and sharing your expertise and your insights. This has been, I think, a very valuable conversation. I hope for a lot of people who are maybe not having those conversations, and they maybe will be inspired to do that now. So I really appreciate your being here. Thank you so much.
Yeah, thank you. It was great.
And I would love to, I'm sure there are other people who are going to want to reach out to you. What's the very best way for them to do that?
Through the website, and it's thedevoteddaughter.com.
Thedevoteddaughter.com. I love the name, The Devoted Daughter. Yes. Yes, you are.
Thank you.
Kelly, thank you so much. I really appreciate
it. You're welcome. Have an awesome day.
Yes, thank you. Mm-hmm. And for those of you who are watching and listening, I really appreciate your being a part of this community. So if you enjoyed this episode, if you got something out of it, please leave us a comment, share what resonated, or click a star if there is a star rating where you're watching or listening. We'd love to hear from you. I love creating and sharing resources for professional women. I said that at the top of the show. Those women who may feel stuck in their careers or in some aspect of their lives. So if something in this episode resonated with you, it struck a nerve, it raised a question, and you would like to chat with someone about it, reach out and let's have that chat. You'll find links to find Kelly and me in the show notes below. And I invite you to continue this conversation in my private Facebook group called the Career Transition Roadmap. You can find the link for that below as well. So join me next Wednesday for another inspiring conversation with a fabulous woman guest. Because you know what? I believe it's our time to thrive. So let's thrive together. Until next time, I'm Maria Tomas Keegan, helping you turn transition into triumph.